You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading in case I got bored.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Literary Treks, TFM's Star Trek books and comics show. I am just one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he always is, thank goodness for him, it's Jonathan Cohn.
Hello. It has been about a month, but our last episode was worth it because it was great talking to Scott Pearson.
Yeah, and that's in the show notes for that. I wrote that we need to do that more often. Get some of the behind the scenes people. I mean, I love talking to the authors. I love just you and I talking about the books, but it's always nice getting somebody else who's in the mix to talk mm-hmm. about these things. So we just need the roster, the Simon & Schuster roster of Star Trek people.
Yeah.
We'll work on that. Maybe not this year. We'll see if we can. Because that'd be nice. Whoever's brain we need to pick to get more books. who's the decision maker? Well, we got quite a bit to talk about today, but beforehand, want to let everybody know how to contact us, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so by using the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Literary Treks, and that will find its way to us. And you can also find the network on X and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks, which I don't get into as often as I should. Slap my wrist. Join us there, and you can see the books we've read and what's coming up. We'll try to keep that updated because we're going to get into some good stuff this year, some good older stuff this year, as well as some new stuff, which we'll talk about in a second. And if you'd like to keep all of our shows coming to you, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. And you can even become an associate producer of your favorite show, just like myself and Greg Rozier for Literary Treks. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. Lastly, please leave us a star rating and a written review wherever you get your podcast. It's great for us and also helps others find the show. Well, Jonathan, with all that out of the way, we have quite a bit of news items to talk about today. Yeah. And we've saved probably the best for last, but we've got some other things too.
Yeah, so we have several new comics that were announced from IDW. We have the Star Trek Starfleet Academy Lost Contact comic that's coming in April, which I'm sure will not be divisive online at all. And then we have the Captain Seven, which is an ongoing series that they're starting in September. They will do everything but give us Legacy. But I'm excited to see the Captain Seven one. Yes. I'm actually really interested. It is an epic story about survival and they even put the word Legacy in the description. Darn it! They are baiting us!
They know how to get us.
The epic story about survival, and I did not even read that. No. And so I was just like, what?
Yeah, it's right there.
Okay. The epic story about survival and legacy as a secret mission led by Captain 7 of 9 brings the Enterprise G beyond the four quadrants of the galaxy for the first time ever. The Enterprise ventures into a hidden region of space where time fractures, minds unravel, and an unseen power manipulates fear itself, testing whether the Federation's ideals of exploration are salvation or the universe's greatest mistake. They said Captain 7 on the Enterprise G. Okay, you know what? I am excited about those comics.
Yeah, we'll check those out for sure. It sounds like I wasn't super keen on the cover artwork, but I'm going to give it a chance because, I mean, I'm not huge into comics anyways, so I'm not not going to judge these books by their cover. And and it's, I mean, who am I to judge artwork that I could never possibly do in my whole life?
Right. And then we have one. This one's just interesting. It's Captain Raffi series, Star Trek Zero Point, which is starting in October. And here's the blurb. While the Enterprise vanishes beyond the galaxy, Captain Raffi Musiker commands a starship tasked with preventing tomorrow's disasters today, guided by a powerful artificial intelligence wearing the face of a familiar ally that may know too much and understand too little about hope. So we have that Raffi one.
Yeah.
I'm really confused on why she's a captain now.
Well, yeah, I'm curious about how long afterwards this takes place. And that I'm getting vibes from this. So this is apparently going to kind of parallel the Captain 7 series. And so I get vibes of the Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant kind of things where there's like kind of parallel stories going on that they'll probably do these big crossovers from time to time. So we'll have to see. I don't know. I don't think we've even seen any artwork for that one yet. I think they released like kind of the logo graphic for the Star Trek Zero Point. But I don't know. Yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll definitely check those out when they start coming out.
And then we have the 50-page Star Trek 60th Anniversary Special, one big celebration of the compelling and beloved franchise. 50 pages.
It's pretty good.
Interesting. That's a pretty decent one. That's pretty.
They got two shot.
Yeah. But in one.
In one. Yeah. So that'll be. No idea what that is. It's probably going to be some big crossover thing, or maybe it's like the. We got one in the last couple of years that had just a bunch of short stories in it, basically. So that could be interesting too.
That wouldn't surprise me. Do five of the main characters and do 10-page story each or something. But that's not the big deal. The big deal is that we have a new novel announcement.
Woohoo!
We have an epic new novel celebrating the 60th anniversary of Star Trek, the original series. And it is written by Mr. David Mack, who we just had on a few months ago.
Yes.
The title of the book is Echoes in Eternity. And you noticed immediately something about the title.
Yeah, it's very, very similar to Greg Cox's original series novel, Lost to Eternity. We have no inside knowledge of this. They might just be a coincidence, just a necessary thing to have Eternity in there. But I am a little curious, just given the blurb on here and the timey-wiminess of it that also had some aspects in Greg Cox's book, too.
So I'll read that. It says, three lives. A child mourns the mother she'll never know. A scion of privilege falls into disgrace and yearns to redeem his sullied name. And a young Starfleet officer who dreams of a life lived amidst the stars, receives his first starship command, each of them unaware that the threads of their lives are fated to be eternally intertwined. 3 decades. On the surface of the barren world KX-1 lies a secret fallen from the stars, But this desolate planet is accessible only during brief intervals, many years apart, thanks to its complex orbit between two black holes, whose fearsome gravities bend space and time. To unravel its mysteries will be the work of not one mission, but three, carried out over the course of 27 years. One destiny. As flaring tensions place innocent lives in peril, three souls who have no reason to trust one another must put aside their fears and suspicions to embrace the possibility of a grander cosmos than they've ever dared to imagine, one in which all that we do in life echoes in eternity.
Wow.
And I feel like they should have restructured it and said, had put this at the end so that it says, three lives, three decades, one destiny.
Yeah, it sounds like a good movie tagline.
Yes, exactly.
kind of like the Star Trek Generations, like, you know, two generations, one destiny or whatever it was, something
right,
to that
right.
effect. But this, it's interesting that there's no talk in here of Kirk. Like, the only Star Trek... Yeah, a young Starfleet officer. That's like the only Star Trekiness we get here. Otherwise, it just sounds like a epic sci-fi adventure. And actually, the middle section with the planet that is only accessible during brief intervals, many years apart, kind of reminds me of like Brigadoon, or, you know, like that episode of Deep Space Nine Meridian, where like the island or the planet just appears every so often. That's obviously not the case here, but. Got flashes.
It would have been more funny if the planet only shows up once every 60 years.
Yeah.
Be like, ah.
I see what you did there. This is every 27 years, if I remember correctly. I believe that's how often Pennywise shows up.
I think that's right. Yeah. It was funny watching when my family went to watch the last Star Wars movie that came out, Rise of Skywalker. There's a line where they go to this festival and he says, "Oh, this festival only happens once every 42 years." And my dad, I'd already known this because I'd seen the movie, but my dad starts doing the math and he says, 42 years ago when this released, that's when A New Hope came out. And I was like, yes, Dad, that's the joke. And he was like, oh, okay. It's like, yeah, they're not going for the low-hanging fruit on this one.
So they weren't, it wasn't the meaning of life or...
Right, yeah, the 42, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's not that. But it's David Mack. Love David.
Yeah.
We'll, of course, have him on the show.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would hope he would come back. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting our hands on that, which it comes out in hardcover, which it's been a while since we've got an original series hardcover, but it's coming out in November of 2026, so just a couple months after the 60th anniversary of the premiere of Star Trek, and we've still got an Una McCormick book that's coming out in between then, so...
And a Dayton Ward one.
That comes out after this one.
After this episode, between now and...
Holy cow, I forgot we've got, as we're recording this, it's like, a month and a half,
two months away. Yeah.
We get the Star Trek Picard novel. Wow, we're just like flush with Star Trek books right now. But we want more. I don't want anybody to hear that we're overcome with the Star Trek. We want more Star Trek books. So, this is going to be an exciting year.
Do you know something about Dayton? I don't know.
No, I don't actually. I just completely spaced on the one that's coming out, To Defy Fate. Yes. Wow. So we've got To Defy Fate, and then we've got the Peacekeepers.
Yeah.
Or Peacemakers.
I think it's Peacemakers.
We had the same conversation with Scott.
With Scott, exactly.
And then this one, Echoes in Eternity, from David. So good year for Star Trek, good year for these authors. So now I'm just kind of delaying the inevitable, and that's getting into the feature for today. So
you're going to have to take another pathway to get in there.
Wow. Well, we, it's been a long time since we've read Mosaic, and... We discussed it, well, a previous host hosts discussed Jerry Taylor's Mosaic on Literary Treks way back when, and it had mixed reviews. I think each of us has read it and had mixed reviews on Mosaic as well. And so we thought, you know, it's time, it's past time probably, that we read and discuss Pathways. And one of the things that I like kind of want to start off saying is, if you listen to our last episode where we talked to Scott Pearson, at the end of that episode, we got so excited to talk about Pathways. And I like, cause it's, like I said, it's been a long time coming. Mm-hmm. And it's Jerry Taylor, the mother of Star Trek Voyager. She passed away last year in 2025. And so we thought, you know what, this would be a good book to finally read. And well, it's like 500 pages, 5-point font, and it took a while to get through it. Maybe our excitement was
premature. So, like, and especially, at least for me, I can speak, because Voyager is my favorite of the TV shows, which I know, like, nobody else feels that way, but that's how I feel. It's my favorite of the TV shows. And the outside, there's one author that brought me to Star Trek originally in 2016, which was John Dixon Miller. But beyond his books, the first books that I got into, not knowing the authors, just getting into the books, were the Voyager books, because I liked the Voyager series. And so I've really enjoyed most of the Voyager books I've read. And it's painful to say that I really didn't like this one. And I'd be willing to go and say this is my least favorite Voyager book I've read, which I've read, well, I can count in a moment. But yeah, it's my least favorite of the Voyager books I've read. How about you?
Yeah. This is one that had so much potential, but I mean, some of the very earliest of the Star Trek Voyager books, you know, when they were first coming out, were tough. But those at least had the excuse that they didn't know the characters yet. They were writing the books based off the scripts. But yeah, this, for being a hardcover special event book that is criminally missing the Doctor.
Yes.
He did not get a story in here. Yeah, this was, it's just, it's not good. Yeah, this may be one of my least favorite ones.
I just counted, it's 27.
Wow.
Voyager books that I've read. Yeah. I will say, though, that let's start from a more macro sense before we get into the micro. On a macro level, this book is just framed differently than most Star Trek books, because you have the frame story of our main cast is captured on this planet, and you get the book alternates between a really short chapter that's maybe 10 pages or less, and then you have a really long chapter that's 50 to 90 pages in length. And so the short chapter is the frame story, and ostensibly it's about our main characters trying to survive. They meet some, Harry Kim meets a friend, a lady friend kind of, and which, like, they're like, their dynamic was weird. Yeah. But you have that frame story. You have Janeway, who comes in with some plan to get them out, and then that doesn't go much anywhere. And then they finally just, oh, well, we have a way to escape. And then they just kind of escape at the end, and the friend can't join them, as we knew would know it would happen. And that's the frame story. And the frame story is about the length of one of the oversized chapters for the other characters. And I think that the problem is that I kept hoping that one of the two would really sell me. Either the flashback chapters, the backstory chapter, the origin story chapters, yeah, as they are, would win me over, or the frame story. Neither one ever got there. The frame story didn't have enough time to do anything interesting, and the backstories, to me, had the time. What they were telling me was not interesting.
Yeah.
And so you had that push and pull. And then this is just a pacing issue I have found with most books. Writing 80 to 90 page chapters does not work unless you just really have a propulsive story that's just taking you through, energetic, you're really excited. These were not that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, the framing story itself, yeah, just like you said, it did not have time to really make us care about anything. I mean, they're basically thrown into, it's not even a work camp. It's really like just a concentration camp. It's just a prison. I can't right. remember what they called it specifically in the book, but it just, I understand where she was going with it, like kind of trying to mm-hmm. put them in this perilous position to where the way that they're going to kind of pass time while they're not trying to escape is to just tell stories about themselves, get to know each other better, even though they already at this point know a lot about each other, but kind of get real deep into knowing each other, you know, just this way to like get them in a position, because like otherwise they're sitting around a starship, why haven't they told these stories before, you know, like they need to be in mm-hmm. a position to do that. And like you said, like I don't really understand, they were on an away mission, they got captured, but like otherwise we never really get any kind of motivation of these people that imprisoned them, as far as like, because I mean Neelix had to like kind of finagle his right. way onto a work detail. It's like, but so they're feeding them, they're, you know, like ultimately they were like, oh, they were trespassing. It's like, so you put them in a prison, like why wouldn't you just let them go? Like this doesn't make any sense.
Story reasons,
right? Yeah,
we need to get them around a campfire so that they can do the, now tell us your life yeah. story. Oh, you told yours, all right, tomorrow night, yeah, someone else yeah. is gonna be up
and somebody's gonna be like real unsure if they want to tell their story, but you know, I'm what after sure, hearing somebody you know. else's, they're gonna tell theirs. But yeah, with the,
I was so brave of you to, yeah. to reveal that you had a pretty not bad childhood, not, yeah, and like that a, you know,
better one than I did or whatever. But yeah, like, and then yeah, the whole thing with Janeway showing up and the whole,
that got me excited, because I was yeah. like, okay, something's happening in the frame story. Janeway's there, and he's yeah. like, oh, she passed me this special note,
like Borg tech kind of stuff.
Yeah, Borg tech. Yeah, yeah, which was. Which I think, wasn't it through a kiss?
That no, she pressed? Slapped him. And
she slapped him. That's what it was.
Yeah, with her ring him. Or something like that. Yeah,
that's right.
And it that's was just right. like, and I mean, even that was kind of like, okay, this is interesting. Like he's kind of getting pseudo assimilated and getting this plan or something, which really didn't, yeah, do anything, because they were already kind of trying to figure out a plan, and they're all smart people and would have figured out how to build a transporter anyway. And you know, by the end of it, like you said, they just kind of, they're done. They're done on this planet. They've all told their stories, or at least the main characters got to, and so they are right. going to leave now.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, kind of frustrating with it. And from, you know, just that macro sense of, I think this would have worked better in book form if it was a legitimate novella collection.
Yeah.
If they actually pitched it as, you're going to read a novella per character, and if they'd actually cut off a lot per novella. This is, like, I understand sometimes you have to make books longer, you have to oversize them. Keeping with Voyager, Full Circle, which is my favorite Voyager book of all time, is a 500-page book, because they had to, she basically had to do two novels in one to kind of catch up for yeah. Voyager. And I totally get that. And that worked there, and she had the right story and pacing, and everything worked. Here, you cram so much in when it wasn't necessary. These could have, instead of been 80-page novellas, these could have been 40-page short stories.
Yeah.
And you could have had a standard Star Trek book length instead of a math, which, yeah, fantasy fans would say this is nothing. But for Star Trek fans, this is an epic.
This is
pretty, for yeah. for us. And so, because it's not a novella collection, not really a novel, and it's got that push and pull, it's conceptually frustrating. I will give it credit for one thing. These would have made good television episodes.
Yeah.
And I think that that's because Jerry Taylor is a television, or was a television producer, and so she was used to that format. And so I don't know. I don't expect that these were scripts that she just adapted, although they could be. But at least I think if they had, you know, they don't have to do a 5-episode or 8-episode arc of them being captured the whole time. But this concept of doing a few episodes where you see the characters' backstories like this would have worked just fine on the TV show.
Which, and we got that from time to time. Like, we got a little bit of, you know, Chakotay with his dad, or, you know,
Harry with his girlfriend.
Yeah. And we got to meet his parents once, I think, like in the first episode, or wherever it was. And yeah, I think if these had been like short stories or even novellas, that would have worked better. But there was so much that needed to be trimmed out of them, because in the book, in what the novel was trying to do, there was too much extra fluff. Like the writing itself, like, was just not your standard novel writing. It was such a different experience, I guess, from a lot of the other Star Trek books that we've read. Even, I think, from Mosaic in some ways. Like, there was a lot that could have and probably should have been trimmed from each of the stories. Like, there was a lot of points in each of these characters' stories that just didn't add anything to their overall story. And they weren't even like Easter eggs either. It was just like a point that had no point. And I think, yeah, like, this would have worked better as a novel if each of their stories had something to contribute then to the framing story of, like, oh, like, here's my story. And then they come back to the framing story and it's like, hey, you know what? It just occurred to me, we should, you know, you forgot about this part of my past that I used to do this. And, like, we should,
you
try
built
something.
A campfire out of this.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, here's where I learned my survival skills, or I don't know, but like the fact that these individual stories were literally like, it was framed up for them to tell a story to pass time. That's what it felt like as we read it. It's like, I'm reading the story. We're done with Chakotay. We're done with Chakotay. There's nothing we're not going to revisit Chakotay's chapter anymore through this book as soon as we're done with it, you know? And so having them as novellas or short stories within a larger volume just would have made more sense, because you have a beginning, middle, and end, which in arguably some of these don't really some of these are kind of just the middle.
But I agree.
And we'll talk about each of them as we go through. But yeah, I think just there was an idea here for this book that I think just didn't quite get where it needed to be. Like, because this, like, I don't know, like I said, we were both super excited about this, because we're like, oh man, we're gonna get all these stories about their, you know, like their origin stories, and we did kind of get that, but they were just not what I think we were expecting, especially from Jerry Taylor.
And it might just be writer working in the medium. I know some novel writers that I think are fantastic. And yet I saw teleplays, or at least what they put on television, and I'm like, yeah, you need to stick with novels. That's your strong suit.
Yeah.
And I've seen the reverse here, where I think that Jerry Taylor is a strong television producer and not as strong a novelist. And I wonder, it just makes me wonder, what if she had like outlined these and given them to Christie or someone else? Well, for sure, we know a Christie Golden version would have been way shorter, because this is like 5 Christie Golden books.
The Chakotay chapter was a Christie Golden book.
The Chakotay chapter, exactly. Yeah. You're not wrong.
No.
let's go into the Chakotay chapter. That one was interesting, because we got to see some of him with his dad and how disappointed his dad was of his decision to go work with Starfleet. We also got more Indian cliches, which, you know, is kind of typical for Chakotay. I thought it was weird that she goes back. Jerry Taylor decides to have us go back to him just visiting his dad. I think it's either 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
And by the final time, I was like, You could have like short. You don't need to have 3 different encounters with his dad in the book. You could have just had like 2 or however many it was. It should have been 1 less, I felt.
Yeah. I think, and this is probably what I feel like is the strongest of all the stories. But yes, it's one that could have been trimmed down. I actually did, by the end of this one, feel like, man, I mean, everybody always talks about, and I think even Robert Beltran has talked about how they've done such a disservice to Chakotay by just never giving him like anything to do on the show.
Right.
And when they did, it wasn't really great, you know. And this, you know, and we've gotten a little bit of his backstory, like we said, on the show. But like this, like when I got done with this chapter, I was like, man, I wish this is something I wish we'd have seen in the show. Like this, some of this did add a lot more to his character. Like the fact that he was, we already knew from the show that he wasn't really into the culture stuff, you know, as a child. And obviously he adopted that at some point. We knew that his tattoo was like a, like for his father.
Right.
Which we kind of only touched on in this story, but what I did feel like, as long and kind of drawn out as this his story was, I feel like it did give us a pretty decent picture of who he was and why he like joined the Maquis, and even though he wanted to be out in space and wanted to, you know, travel among the stars and thought he wanted to join Starfleet, you know, some of his cultural upbringing still wanted him. He still kind of taught him, I guess, how to kind of care for others and fight injustice and stuff like that. So some of that, like, I really did appreciate. But yeah, like and to find out at the end that is, I think, or maybe I'm thinking of the Harry Kim one. I don't think his father ended up ever being proud that he joined Starfleet. I can't remember. But either way, like, yeah, like you said, like some of those touch points, I guess, you know, with his father, that's like, okay, let's just have a few of these. We already know he, like, even somebody not having ever seen any of the episodes of Voyager, pretty early on in his story, you kind of know that he's got a pretty tenuous relationship with his father.
Right. I'm trying to remember, was it Chakotay that talks about the really tough instructor?
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Harry Kim is also like, hey, I had that instructor too.
Yeah.
I liked that transition. I really did.
Yeah.
And I liked the instructor, and I was actually kind of hoping that it would turn out that I was actually hoping, have you ever seen the movie Hoodwinked?
I don't think so.
Okay, so I'm about to spoil it because the movie, literally you can't find it anywhere, but in the movie Hoodwinked, It's a bunch of people, different people, telling their story of the same day, but from each of their perspectives. And in every single story, the same character shows up for all of them. And then it turns out that one character was the murderer,
okay,
basically,
yeah,
at the end of the movie. And that's what I was hoping was going to happen with this, was that each one of them was going to encounter this same instructor,
yeah,
and then that would somehow be important at the end. And I was like, okay. And then he's only in, what, like two, maybe... Yeah, I think two of the stories. And I was like, all right, she dropped that plot line. But okay, but that was an interesting tie between Chakotay and Harry. And I have to say, I know you didn't like the Harry one as much. I didn't love it, but I think, thinking back, I think my favorite was the Harry one.
Okay. Well, I think, yeah, with the Harry one, I think what I didn't like, well, one is that, like, yeah, that instructor who was lieutenant something or other with Chakotay, but was a lieutenant commander for Harry. That's how the story starts. Like in the framing story, is like, well, you know, it's interesting that you had him, cause I had him too. And here's my story. And then it's still like, you know, 30, 40 pages before we ever get to that character, because we start with Harry as a child. And I did like his story, as a whole, because it really gave us, a real glimpse into Harry as kind of the perfectionist, the one who's trying to please his parents, really, but his superiors and everything, and trying to be the best. What I didn't like about him, though, was as a child, he, like, the writing was in the voice of a child, which was annoying, but it was also way too, the vocabulary was not the vocabulary of a child. Even one in this, like, Asian upbringing that he was getting from these really strict, rigid parents, you know, that want him to succeed at everything, it's still, I could hear her trying to write a child, but it was like the words just didn't match. And that super took me out of it for like a while until he got into his teenage and, you know, and Starfleet Academy time.
I did really like in his story where he's talking, I think he's talking with the gardener.
Oh, with Boothby?
Is that Boothby? I don't remember the names.
I think it was Boothby, like the old guy that's in. Like,
yeah, the old guy. Yeah. Yeah. I like this conversation with him. And he's like, Boothby kind of knows. stuff. Like, he knows you didn't pass as much. And he comes back. He's like, "How did you know?" And Boothby's like, "I know everything." That was pretty cute.
Yes, yeah.
That was pretty funny. Then we have B'Elanna. And I remember very little about this one, to be honest. I hope you remember more.
Not really. No. I mean, it's kind of the same. It's a lot of the same stuff that we actually got in a couple different episodes of B'Elanna as a child, who she struggles with her Klingon heritage, like kind of having the mixed heritage, and struggling with her like anger and emotions.
About her dad leaving.
And about her dad leaving. That was a big part of this story, which again was a big part of the show too. And getting teased, like bullied as a child because of this stuff. And which, you know, kind of helped. I mean, it still added a little bit more to that kind of how it formed her as a person, like as an adult.
Yeah.
You know, even just kind of always trying to find her place in the world. Like, you know, like, is she Klingon? Is she human? Is she Starfleet? Is she Nox? Her dad was Starfleet, I think. And her mom was, you know, Klingon. I can't remember if her dad was Starfleet or she was something.
I don't know.
I don't even know. But yeah, like, but yeah, it was kind of forgettable. And I do remember she encountered Tom at one point, and, you know, because she, like, towards the end of her story, this is one thing I did like. And I wish that because the Chakotay story ends with him basically in the Delta Quadrant.
Right. Yeah.
Harry's story, I really wish they would have taken it just a little bit further. To him, I guess they did bring it to where
doesn't he say he's going to Deep Space Nine to get on?
Well, no, I think they skipped that part and had him like, she didn't, was, did she have the line, Janeway have the line like at ease before you've sprained something or like, or maybe it was before. Like,
yeah. There is a Janeway line.
Yeah. There was something in there, but basically it took him just about up to that point. B'Elanna's story, this one definitely I remember when they got on the bridge and she's all angry and who's, you know, she's asking Chakotay like, who's she to be given orders, and he's like, she's the captain, and that's kind of how that one ends. So I did like how some of these, not all of them, but some of them kind of led us to that point. I guess they do all except for maybe Tuvok's, like, lead us right to their time, which is what the whole point, I guess, is of this book. But
it was also interesting that between the Chakotay chapter and the B'Elanna chapter, you get to see Chakotay's relationship with the captain of the ship. And they have this kind of, they think they're kind of trying to be discreet for the crew, but the crew's like, we already know. Don't even bother trying to not let us know.
Or no, is that his relationship with Seska?
That's who it was, yeah. Seska. Sorry.
Which that was kind of interesting, though, yeah, to see her kind of crop up in a couple stories, kind of like we do on the show. Yeah. Like, she just kind of crops up here and there. But yeah. I thought it was interesting how, like, because we knew from the show that Tom and Chakotay had met, and then Chakotay said, right, well, you just ran as soon as you could to Starfleet to save your...
Right.
And we get to see part of that scene in B'Elanna's chapter, because she's on Chakotay's ship, and Tom is there, but, well, and... there's this something that was never on the show until later, but like kind of a spark where Tom seems to really be attracted to her, but she's really doesn't care about him. He's just some flyboy guy or whatever. But I did like that they encountered each other, except for the fact that we'd never heard about that on the show. And you'd think we would have.
Right. You think they'd be like, oh yeah, I remember you.
Yeah. Like, cause Chakotay and Tom obviously knew each other, but B'Elanna was not part of that conversation, or was not included in that conversation, at least on the show. But yeah, Tom's was one that was, I have a real love hate for Tom's story. My love is that just kind of getting to see, what ultimately led to him, ending up in that penal colony to begin with, like the shuttle accident, which was just his own hubris really. And you know, it was kind of better than what they described in that Next Generation episode with the same actor, but like a different character, Nick Locarno or whatever from that show. But what I And also getting to see like his upbringing again. We know he's got a tenuous relationship with his father and like all the expectations from the Starfleet Admiral. But what I really didn't like is the entire plot line about the ski trips and stuff, because that went nowhere. We got a little bit of his like kind of daredevil attitude, and you know, he gets caught in an avalanche and stuff. But otherwise, like, I got so bored every time they went skiing.
It was, yeah, it was a weird choice to be like, all right, well, we've been training for this and I've been part of this team. All right, I'm going to quit the rowing team. I'm going to go to the skiing team. Yeah. And it's like, because that's what I want to do, Dad. And I'm a skier at heart.
Yeah.
I was like, wouldn't it be make more sense that he was like a, like going to like the racing team, like the piloting team, like something that's
which
like
makes more sense with rowing. Actually.
Makes more sense with rowing. Yeah. Like, why skiing? Because it's dangerous. Eh.
Yeah.
Anyway. And also the thing with B'Elanna, it's like I buy that he was instantly attracted to her, because especially in the early seasons, they were definitely trying to just do the Will Riker, he's just attracted to everybody, all the girls type thing with him. So I totally, that totally makes sense for me. And Neelix's story was like, man, I want to say one of these is good, but I guess it was.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's Neelix's story. Here's what I'll say. I think that she got his voice the best of the cast. I think that when I was reading his story, I was like, this sounds like Neelix talking, which is funny because he's usually everybody's least favorite to hear talk.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, though. Like, this was kind of a forgettable one, too. It was good to finally see the destruction or whatever on the moon that he happened to be on the like the main planet for. But again, like, it's kind of one where it's like we just didn't, I feel like we didn't quite get the right story for Neelix.
Right.
That more of that should have been focused on, you know, cause then, I mean, it flowed fine, I guess, just on like kind of the logic of how he ended up not getting caught in that Metreon cascade, and eventually how he ended up on a, as a scavenger, basically, kind of like we kind of got there, but it was like, this was kind of almost a lost opportunity to make Neelix like super heroic almost, and then like kind of bring him onto Voyager to where he's got some credibility, I guess, going into like, I'm going to guide you through the Delta Quadrant because I know everything, which we did not see that in this story.
No, we did not. I will say the best part of his story, now that I'm thinking back on it, and I think it's like addressed in his story, but it's also retold in Kez's story, is how he meets Kez and how he kind of tries to help her get out of there, out of the, what was it, the Kazon camp. That I liked, because his dynamic with Kes was something that I felt the show lacked a lot. And I liked seeing their few interactions here.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing I felt like was missing, too, was just their, like, from Neelix's story specifically, like, I feel like when he saw her, he found somebody who needed to be saved, not somebody he was, like, in love with or anything. And, and again, yeah, like, I think we got more of that in Kes's story, but even still, from Neelix's story, it was like, I came out of that story going, wait, so he was in love with her, or did he just found this like poor little girl that needed to be saved, and so he did, because then all of a sudden they're in love on the show. So.
And then they're not in love on the show, and this is a good tangent. Yeah. When I first watched the show, I skipped part of, I think it was season three, because I was just like, I just want to get to the Borg.
Yeah.
And so I missed them being broken up. And so I get to season four and they're eating something at the dinner table. And I was like, okay, that's sweet. And then Kes just does her Kes stuff and just like dissipates.
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, I guess the actress had to leave the show, but what was happening there? And I was just like so confused. And I went back and I watched their breakup, and I was like, why did you have to do that?
Yeah.
That was so weird. Anyway,
Probably because it was getting weird that Neelix, like this old man, was with this basically a child.
Like baby, yeah, child, yeah.
For Kes, then, we've got, this is one that I really wanted to like because it actually, I think, worked as far as kind of, again, going back to the logic of how she ends up doing what she does. And then even with, you know, just her curiosity about the surface mm-hmm. and everything and how she eventually ends up there. And we knew she was kind of precocious, you know, in that way, especially from that first episode when they get down underground to and meet the Ocampa. And then we get the actual backstory of her and Neelix getting to know each other behind the back of the Kazon guy mm-hmm. who's in charge there. Right. So I actually did kind of like that part. But again, it was just another one of those was just a lot more drawn out than it ever needed to be. At least, you know, like they could have told part of that story, like gotten rid of a lot of stuff in Neelix's story and told part of this, like kind of the back half of Neelix's story and then combined it then eventually with this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Oh, unfortunate. And then Tuvok here, we get a lot of the same stuff that we got from the show.
That's true, yeah.
With him, well, and I kind of forgot some of it. I know he goes to go through Kulinar.
For the first time.
Yeah.
That was a funny thing. It was like, how do you not know?
How did you not know?
About Kola, like he doesn't know what's the name Ponfar. Of the word?
Yeah.
Ponfar.
Yeah.
And he goes through the Ponfar for the first time, and they're like, all right, we need to have the Ponfar talk with him. Yeah. I'm like, how did you not prepare him for this? How did you knew this was coming?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing like, I've always been frustrated about. I get not talking to other cultures about it, but not to right. talk to with amongst yourselves about it. Like, it's such a logical people. It seems like logically you'd want to be prepared or prepare your children for that time. But yeah, like that, I did not need a story about Tuvok's first Ponfar. I did.
I have so many jokes in my head. I'm like, not going to make them.
This is a family show. but yeah, like, I wish in his story, and I guess what I was expecting from his story was a lot more of him and Janeway, which we just did not get.
Yeah, we just didn't get.
I feel like he got put undercover on Chakotay's ship almost immediately after he met Janeway. You know, I guess they had one mission or something like that together, but not to the point where in the show, Janeway mentions multiple times how she is, or he is like her confidant, her mm-hmm. rock, her everything that, you know, which is why she feels so betrayed by him in certain episodes when he goes against her orders or right. whatever. And I just, coming out of his story, I just did not feel that they had that relationship.
Yeah, I felt like it didn't add anything, which was my problem with most of these is I'm just like, I don't feel like I've added anything to my knowledge or love of the characters particularly.
Yeah. Like it's unfortunately this is one of those books where you're not really missing anything by not reading it. Like you've
right
everything of value in this book was already something from the show anyway.
Also, they prominently put Seven in like the middle of the cover with Janeway and Janeway. Maybe the argument because she's the captain and like she was the big seller of the stuff, but like Seven is like unconscious for so much of the frame story, which isn't even that much. She doesn't do anything. It's like, why put her on the cover?
And even when she is conscious and somebody's like, Seven, let's tell your story. And she's like, well, I was a...
We already did that.
Yeah, she basically said, well, I was a child when I was assimilated. Then I was a Borg for like 18 years. And here I am now. And we've just recently had the mission where you encountered the Raven, the ship I was on. So, you know, I mean, they almost name check the whole episode and she's like, so we don't need my story.
Right.
And then, like I said, at the beginning, like the doctor, they even took him off the cover. Like he's just not in this book, which I'm like, did she not like the doctor or like why?
You know what I think happened is when you look at this cover, Cass looks very different than the rest of the crew. I think that's Photoshop.
Well, it's definitely, she's got a halo around her.
Yeah, she's got a halo. But I think that was the spot that the Doctor the original cast.
I think
because
you're right.
She was only in – Cass was only in 3 episodes for season 4. And that was the only crossover between her and
– she came back in season 5 or 6.
But like these cast photos that they would do of them all like standing and looking at something. I don't know. I think there was one that I saw that had her and Jerry Ryan, but this is not that one. No. So I think that they swapped her out for the Doctor in that. But the Doctor is one of the best characters of the show. So when you're missing him, you're missing that dynamic good.
And at this point,
he had the mobile emitter by this point.
Because
this is like, at least I think this is set around season 4-ish.
I think actually there might be a historian's note at the beginning, but like that said it was like,
I'll look.
Like kind of mid to late season 4, I think. So not long after Kes left.
There is no historian's note.
Of course, yeah. But yeah, I feel like I saw that online somewhere, but the implications of the things that they were talking about. But yeah, like I think they should have had the Doctor down there with him. I mean, not like he's got a big backstory, but he could have told Dr. Zimmerman's story or something,
right,
or his memories of being created in a lab. Yeah, I don't know. Like there's just, yeah, like a character like that and to have so many pages dedicated to just nothing stories.
Now, something on the production level that's just kind of interesting. And of course, none of the editors or producers are like still working on this stuff, but it's just interesting to me, which is, so this book was written released in paperback in 99 and hardcover in 98, and that would have been as they're like wrapping up I think season 4-ish on the show, because the show started in 95.
Yeah. Like January of 95,
96. Yeah, so it's 95, 96, 97. Yeah, so it would have been end of season 4. Jerry Taylor did not return for season 5, 6, and 7 as a producer.
Right.
She only produced the first 4 seasons. And this is not the only time that that's happened in a star show where they have a producer of an early season and that person leaves the show before doing tie-in materials. And of course I'm referencing Star Wars Rebels, the TV animated TV show. There were 3 executive producers in the first season. They had Dave Filoni, they had Simon Kinberg, and they had a guy named Greg Weisman. And after the first season, Greg Weisman left the executive producer role on the show, but he went and did comics for the characters and provided backstory for the characters in the comics, in the Kanan comics. And so I'm like, that's kind of interesting that this now the second time that that's happened book wise.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I kind of forgot that Jerry left the show after a while. And you can kind of tell from this book, too, that I don't think she was the biggest 7 of 9 fan. The fact that she gave her nothing to do in the book.
Which I'm would have assumed she'd created I don't know the backstory on like the behind the scenes of the stuff, but I would assume I do know that Seven of Nine was brought in because they wanted more sex appeal.
Exactly.
But
which sounds more like a Rick Berman decision.
That sounds more like a Rick Berman decision. So maybe it wasn't Jerry Taylor, but I will say this book made me appreciate Mosaic more.
Yeah. I mean, this book made me appreciate, I mean, just even the art of writing, I guess, but like,
wow. Okay.
No, I mean, like for what other people do.
That's not,
I didn't mean it as a compliment for this book necessarily, but I think, this may have taken me the longest of any book I've read in the last 5 or 6 years. This was a hard one to pick up. I mean, I'm like super busy at work right now, so that was part of it too. But like the last thing I wanted to do before bed is read a really, really long chapter about something that I didn't really care about. But, you know, am I glad I read it? I mean, I guess the curiosity is gone now. But, you know, I had to give this one one star, which I don't think I've ever given a Star Trek book before. Just it's, I think you said it before, like, you know, that for somebody who's created all these characters, she just, the voices weren't there, the writing wasn't really there. It was a tough one. So yeah,
I was literally looking at my shelves right now thinking, have I ever given a one star to a Star Trek book? And as I'm looking, it has happened. I've read about 150 now. I have done it to one other book.
Yeah.
That was a book that is much more beloved than I'd expect, which is How Much for Just the Planet.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that.
Could not stand that book. I know people who love it. Yeah. And like they're like, what the heck, Jonathan? How do you hate this book? And I'm like, how do you guys love that? And they're like, but don't you know it's a... Anyway, that's not going to go on. But other than that, you're right. And I'm agreeing with you. I'm giving it 1 out of 5. I'm saying that's... I really tried to rack my brain because I hate being negative.
Yeah.
Because I love Voyager.
There's just so many things I think that this could have been, that would have made it so much better. And not even saying like a different writer could have done it, but like if she'd have just done some trimmed in places, connected things a little bit better. Well, got some of their voices right. But yeah, I think if any listeners out there just love this book, please let us know that we just puked all over your favorite book. But tell us why you loved it, because I would love to know. I'd love to get a different perspective on this. I was telling Jonathan before on the other side of the page that I haven't even written my written review of this book because I just don't even know what to say about it. I just, yeah, like you, I hate being negative, but I'd love to know what other people think. So let us know in the Babel conference or wherever you get your feed. Well, we actually talked a lot longer about that than I thought we would. But next time, we haven't done comics in a while. Neither of us are really huge on the comics, so that's kind of easy for us to forget. But we know a lot of people like the comics, so we will do some homework and do some catch-up next time on some comic books that have come out.
After reading this book, we said we are going to find a medium where we read as little words as few words as possible. And so we said comics.
Watch, these ones are going to have just tons of words.
Yeah, there's blocks of text.
Yeah, so we're going to actually...
And you're ambitious with your your plans.
We'll see if we get through them all. Like that, there's a lot. We're really behind, but they've also been pumping these things out. IDW has.
Yeah, so we have Lower Decks 9 through 16 to read, which those will be easy, fun reads. We have Red Shirts. That one is interesting. Yeah. Strange New Worlds, The Seeds of Salvation. It's been a while since we've done Strange New Worlds one. This one, I'll skip. The Last Starship. I don't know what this one's about.
So that one's, it's like their current, like, ongoing series that's like Captain Kirk is somehow revived in, like, the 32nd century or something, like, you know, in kind of new Discovery era. And, I don't really know anything about it beyond that, if that's even accurate. But, yeah.
And then the last one is we have a 5 issues of Voyager Homecoming, which we were talking before we started recording. I don't know how that's going to be, but you can't name a project Voyager Homecoming without readers immediately being like, is it an adaptation of Christy Golden's books? Is it going to be better or worse? Like, we're going to have to do that.
Yeah.
So
we'll have to. We'll have to read those and just see. I'm actually, like, that's probably the one I'm most excited about, just because we don't get Voyager comics, like, at all. And after what we just talked about, it's got to
be worse.
Well, Jonathan, when you're not trying to wash that book out of your brain, that's mean. Anyway, I'm going to stick with it. Where can people find you?
You can find me on YouTube. My YouTube channel is just my name, Jonathan Cohn. You can also find me on Twitter, where I talk about a lot of stuff. And you can find my Goodreads at Jonathan Cohn.
Well, you can also find me on YouTube at Bookbuster Reviews. And
woohoo! It's up. Yeah. He has his videos up. You can watch them.
They're there. There's like eight of them.
And he's going to do more.
I am going to do more.
Make him do more.
Yes. I'm so busy at work right now. Yes, so you can find me there on YouTube at Bookbuster Reviews. I've got an Instagram that has just about as many, just about as few posts at Bookbuster Reviews. And then you can find me on Facebook, poking around in the Babel Conference and other Star Trek book-like groups under my name, Casey Pettit. And I think that's about it. Oh, and on Goodreads at Knitting Trekkie. I've got different names for everything. But anyway, that's about all I think that we can say for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.